You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to The Profile podcast. God calls us to use our influence to share his love and goodness. For some, this is in leadership. I'm Andy Peck, and for the past 19 years, I've been interviewing Christians to find out how to lead better. Taking the initiative isn't always easy, so I hope you'll benefit from this latest conversation. The Profile podcast is brought to you by Premier Christianity magazine. Subscribe today and get full online access and the print magazine every month at premierchristianity.com.
I wonder if, as a thought experiment, you've ever imagined a video of your average day. I wonder what would be in it, and what might you conclude about yourself when you monitor the pace of your day? According to Professor Richard Jolly of London Business School, 95% of executives he has interviewed suffer from hurry sickness. Symptoms include being tired, stressed, and checking your phone multiple times an hour. Maybe that describes you. Or maybe it's a temptation in a culture where saying, I'm busy or really busy, is equated with being important or indispensable. Leadership has its tough moments and hurried moments, but when it becomes a lifestyle, most have found it's not sustainable. And as Christians being constantly hurried, well, that may say something about how we see ourselves and our work. Well, I'm delighted to be joined on the Leadership Show by Alan Fadling, the author of The Unhurried Leader, a book that was recommended by a former guest on the show. He's an award-winning author of five other books also, and heads up Unhurried Living, which produces a range of ministries, resources, and events for those looking to slow down. He's been on a journey on this area himself, and I look forward to learning how to become an unhurried leader and Christian, and with a new year soon upon us, maybe changing things for 2025. So, Alan, lovely to welcome you to the Leadership Show.
Thank you so much, Andy. It's good to be with you.
A little on your context, first of all, where you're based and your ministry background.
Yeah, well, I live here in Southern California, Orange County, particularly. This year is my 40th year in pastoral ministry. First half of that or so was in the local church, mostly with youth or young adults. And then these last 20 or so years have more so been in the arena of pastoring pastors or coming alongside leaders, not just church leaders, but Christian leaders in a lot of different settings. And so I get to coach, I get to speak, I get to write. I'm really enjoying what I get to do.
Oh, that's great. Great to hear. So, I mean, you got to a point, as I understand it, where maybe burnout was close or it happened to you. What were the signs?
Yeah, well, so I was in my late 20s and I was a full-time student at Fuller Seminary here in Southern California. I was a newly married young man and I was a full-time pastor in a fairly large Southern California church. And I was perhaps not surprising, I was getting a bit toasty, you know, to use the language of burnout. And that's bad pacing. When you're burning out in your late 20s, I mean, you know, you'd like to think you've got decades of ministry in you, not just a few years. And it was at that point that God brought some mentors into my life who I would now say lived a more unhurried way, perhaps in the spirit of Jesus, rather than the frantically hurried way I was trying to do ministry that really did not have that much to do with Jesus at all, to be frank. And so that, you know, 35 years ago began a new journey and, you know, learning to live at the pace of Jesus, at the pace of the kingdom, I would say at the pace of grace and peace. And that's just a different pace than the common cultural pace that surrounds us.
So, Alan, was there a moment, did someone come to talk to you and say, hey, I'm a bit concerned? What was the kind of trigger point?
Yeah, I would say it was a point of hunger and need. This mentor I mentioned, his name was Chuck. He was on staff at Saddleback, which is right here in our backyard. He was their very first college pastor 30-some years ago. And really what he did was he reintroduced me to Jesus. He taught out of John 15, the vine and branch language. And I was at that point very much a branch detached and drying up and puzzled as to why I wasn't as fruitful as I'd hoped I'd be. So I think he painted a picture and he cast a vision for me of a life of working with God rather than working for God. And that made a great deal of difference. It sparked something in me that has guided me all of these years since.
Do you recall changing things about your schedule? Was it changing how you prayed? Was it cutting down your hours? What were the first outward signs of a change?
The way I would say it is, I began to realize that God had given me work, but God was also giving me space to rest, to pray. And so, yes, I began to punctuate my work rather than just working nonstop as many hours as I could physically manage. I began to open up spaces in my daily schedule, moments to pray, moments to be quiet in the presence of God. I opened up space in my week to experiment with a weekly Sabbath. Sabbath is a God-given gift, a day that's not measured by how much you produced, but a day to simply enjoy the goodness of what God gives us. And then I also began to practice a kind of monthly day retreat, perhaps in the spirit of Jesus, who in Luke 5, the gospeler says, Jesus often withdrew to lonely places to pray. And if I'd been honest, in my 20s, I did not do that often. I hardly ever did that. But that following of Jesus to the lonely place to pray, in my case, it was a mentor's recommendation, a day a month, go away, be with God, not to plan something, not to solve something, but to enjoy the presence of God. And then that began, that rhythm of daily and weekly and monthly practices began to punctuate and give context to my work and made a great deal of difference.
Some people listening may be thinking, well, this is a temperamental thing. Maybe within the Myers-Briggs preferences or some other indicator, you know, there are those who are wired for being hurried and there are those who are more contemplative. Would you say that there's a degree of truth in that, or do you think everyone really should, every leader should have this unhurried disposition?
Well, I do think it will look different as far as how God has made you. But one of the things I like to distinguish, and this is something I learned from Dallas Willard, is that there's a great difference between being hurried and being busy. Busy, that's your calendar. Jesus had very busy days when the crowd just kept coming. Hurried, that's your soul. That's what's happening inside of you. And hurried in that case is something that tends to be more rooted in something like anxiety or in a need to prove myself or in a definition of my life where my identity is in question. And my work, therefore, becomes a place to prove something about myself. So when I say unhurried, I don't mean sitting in a recliner, watching sports on television, and doing half as much as everybody else. I've joked, for example, as it relates to Sabbath, that I can get more done in 6 days than I can get done in 7 days. And that's not just a cute little, you know, greeting card saying. That's been tested for me. When I enter into rest, that impacts my work. So as far as temperament, I think there's all kinds of continuums. You know, solitude and community is a continuum. We need both. Just because I happen to be an introvert doesn't mean that community and hard work isn't something God's inviting me to. Nonetheless, the one who would describe themselves perhaps as a driven or type A sort of person, a very activist sort of temperament, Jesus is still inviting them to come away to the lonely place to pray. Still, the command to love is still the great command. And there are all kinds of ways we learn to live into that command.
And so, Alan, at some point, you've moved away from local church pastoral ministry to form Unhurried Living. And clearly you've found an appetite amongst your connections for and learning and understanding what you're providing.
Yeah, that it's been remarkable. Even just the language of hurry, there seems to be a kind of intuitive awareness that hurry is not doing as much for me as I think it is. You know, we talked perhaps about, I wish I had more time. And we attempt to do that by cramming as much as we can into every minute and every hour. That's one approach to trying to get more time, multitasking and putting things back to back. But another way to attempt to have more time, although obviously all of us have only the 24 hours everyone else does, is to be more present in every moment, to sink deep into each moment God gives us. That's a different way of having more time, so to speak. And so for me, what I realize is there is something about slowing down that enables me to be more where I am, be with the person who's standing in front of me, to be present to them and not to be 80% at the next thing on my list and only 20% with them, or to be fully present to the task that I'm working on or the project that I'm addressing. I'm more creative when I do that. I work from a place of peace instead of a place of frantic anxiety. And in the end, that ends up being better work.
Alan, you've mentioned the distinction between being hurried and being busy, which was really helpful. As you've worked with people, are there other areas that people commonly misunderstand within this whole ministry? And perhaps it's hard for them to grasp when you're maybe doing mentoring or leading a session.
Yeah, so one of the things I like to have leaders think about is to what degree is their busy orientation moving them forward in the ways they most care about? There is a way of filling a day with busy activity that you can get to the end of and ask yourself, did any of that matter? Have I actually done the thing that God has invited me to do? Am I actually living into the great command to love God and to love the one that's near me? And has all that I've been doing moved the ball forward in that way? So again, getting underneath that false definition of busy makes me important. It's funny, you hear someone, you ask them, how are you doing? And sometimes if you get a one-word answer, sometimes that one-word answer is busy. And it kind of feels like half complaint and half boast.
Right. Yes.
Like it's, you know, it's partly it's, oh man, I'm so busy. I'm exhausted. Oh, I wish I could get a break. But part of it is also, man, am I in demand? Do a lot of people need me? I am so important. And that false sense of I am what I do, or I am what I achieve, or I am what I acquire. The problem with that identity is you have to keep doing and achieving and acquiring. It becomes a sort of treadmill. What I do and what I achieve was never meant to be the definition of who I am. It was just meant to be an expression of who I am. And so that identity piece, that I am who God's made me, and then I do good things with God, that's a beautiful vision that some leaders struggle to embrace.
And of course, Alan, this all impacts on our understanding of kingdom and of grace and of God acting with us and for us. Maybe you could say a few things about that.
There was a spiritual writer, Bernard of Clairvaux, and he had a beautiful image, I think, that helps us here. He said, there is in the church too many who act like canals. The water comes in, the water goes out. He said, what we need are reservoirs. Reservoirs, of course, fill and then give out the overflow to those around them. So what I like to think of is I might be the sort of person who, as David says in Psalm 23, whose cup overflows, that maybe the overflow is the fruit of my work, is the way that my life touches other lives, that I don't serve others at the cost of my soul's well-being. I actually serve others from the overflow of God in me, God in the spirit of Jesus, who says, you know, those who trust me, it's going to be like rivers of living water flowing from within them. this has been my quest. How might I be that sort of person in ministry? Someone who is fully enjoying who God is right now and then giving from that abundance, from that overflow. That to me is a strategic vision of how to sustainably engage in the kingdom of you know, God's gracious kingdom.
I think it was Eugene Peterson in his paraphrase of, is it Matthew 11? Come to me, all who are weary. He talks about the unforced rhythms of grace. There's that sense of it's activity, but it's not forced. There's a joy and a peace as you act and as you work and as you lead.
I think there's an intersection between that idea of unforced and my focus of unhurried.
Right.
There's a spaciousness, I think, about still, yes, working hard, being fully engaged. There's a famous basketball coach from our part of the world, John Wooden, back in the UCLA days, who would tell his players, be quick, but don't hurry.
Right.
And I think there is a kind of holy quickness. I'm quick to respond to the Spirit's nudge. I'm quick to respond in love to the need that comes across my path. There's a holy quickness, and then there's an unholy hurry. And being able to distinguish when is my quickness rooted in the Spirit, in love, in joy, and when is it instead hurry rooted in something less godlike, something more like anxiety or self-promotion or insecurity or any number of other things.
I can imagine, Alan, that sometimes there may be some therapeutic needs amongst people who come because they realize that their activity is born out of something from their past, but maybe they are a bit unaware or unable to stop, to change. They're almost addicted. I don't know whether that's an area you go into, whether you pass such people on to others.
Yeah, you're right. This is a real concern. In fact, my first book, An Unhurried Life, the very first sentence of that book is, I'm a recovering speed addict. Now, I'm not talking about a drug, right? I'm talking about my soul. And I think the language of addiction is fitting. There is a kind of powerlessness that we begin to realize that I don't know how to slow myself down. I need help. And part of that help comes from God himself. And actually, this is where some of the disciplines that Dallas Willard called the disciplines of abstinence or of disengagement become so important. As leaders, we can tend to define our leadership only in terms of our activities, the things we do. And of course, God gives us good things that we get to do with him. But there is also the cultivation of our receptivities, the spaces. Some have spoken of it as margin. You know, if you look at a book and open to any page, you'll see spaces between the words, you'll see spaces around the edge of the page, and those spaces make sense of the letters and words on that page. Without space, it's very hard to make meaning. And so these spaces that we build into our lives, our daily, weekly, monthly, annually rhythms, these spaces help make sense of the work that we do. And so again, we want to cultivate receptivity to God, a receiving of grace, so that we can then work hard, energized by grace. And this rhythm, this holy rhythm, I think is a rhythm of a kingdom.
Alan, as we enter soon the new year, what would be some of the things that you would want to suggest to listeners about moving into an unhurried life, particularly those for whom they recognize unhurriedness being part and parcel of their life?
Yeah, one little exercise I often encourage leaders to try on is find a comfortable place to sit. Perhaps you're looking out a window or you're sitting in a natural setting or whatever, just some place comfortable to sit and be quiet for 5 minutes. Set your smartphone or some other timer so you don't have to look every 30 seconds to see if the 5 minutes is done yet. And just notice what happens. Many of us in 5 minutes of silence may begin to feel uncomfortable. it's a fair question. Why are you uncomfortable in 5 minutes of silence? What is the nature of that discomfort? What is it that you believe you're not achieving? What is it that you believe about yourself or about God that makes those 5 minutes so uncomfortable? And I suggest that those 5 minutes, not so much as a therapeutic exercise, but more so as a diagnostic exercise, to just notice what's happening on the inside of them. I want to be able to be the sort of person who can respond to the invitation of Psalm 46 that says, "Be still and know that I'm God." One commentator paraphrased that, "Relax and remember that I'm God." So even just a little 5 minute exercise like that can be a kind of diagnostic for to what degree is hurry an issue in my life.
You've mentioned Dallas Willard, one of my favorite authors as well. He would be one of a number of authors that have helped you in your understanding. And I'm very happy for you to mention other resources that you provide too, including your own books.
Sure. Well, it was one of Dallas's lines, you know, it was something he said to John Ortberg when John was leaving Southern California to join the staff of a large church. And it's the line that John Mark Comer has used as the title of his book, which is to say, we must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. I just think that ruthlessness is a kind of holy invitation. But as far as resources we offer, you know, we happen to have a weekly podcast, Unhurried Living Podcast. That's in part monologues that my wife and I write and record on these sorts of themes, and then interviews with authors writing books on similar topics or perhaps related topics. That's one thing we do. Our website, unhurriedliving.com, provides a lot of free resources that leaders can access. We have hundreds of articles on themes of this sort there. And so those are at least some of the ways that people can benefit from what we offer.
And in terms of your own schedule, you know, 2025 as it unfurls, how do you make sure that unhurried living doesn't become hurried? I mean, how do you maintain your peace amidst the challenges of running a charity and all the demands that that brings?
That's an excellent question. I'll say that when in our part of the country, the pandemic resulted in significant quarantining, we had to double down on some of our intended practices because the temptation to just frantically act to somehow mitigate the ways in which that was impacting, you know, I wasn't going anywhere anymore. I wasn't traveling anywhere anymore. My anxiety began to rise. That's one of the flavors of hurry that's most common in my own soul and one of the places of recovery that I'm involved in. But I think just the whole matter of being able to develop a rhythm of life and then honor it. So for example, for 30 some years, one day a month, my wife and I set aside either most of a day or sometimes an overnight space to just go. And we would say it's part of our discipleship to Jesus that just as he withdraws to lonely places to pray frequently, Luke captures that better than anyone, we want to do that too. I will frequently get to a week and I look in my calendar and I go, oh, this is the week. I set aside the day. This is a terrible time to lose an entire day.
Never a good time.
Oh, and so the temptation is, oh, I'll put it off. I'll do it another time. You know, this is just a really busy week. And what I would say is, I can think of no time when I kept my intention and I stepped away that after that day was done, I felt I'd lost something. I felt like it had somehow cost me. I can tell you countless times when a day like that multiplied the rest of the month, where creative ideas arose or insights into something I had been banging my head against for days just came in a moment like a gift. Grace works that way. If you make space for God to do what God likes doing, you'll find that multiplies the quality of who you are and what you do rather than taking away from it.
I know that's terrific. A terrific way to finish. Just remind us of the website where people can get more.
Yes, just come visit us at unhurriedliving.com.
Well, bless you. Well, you've been wonderfully present in this conversation. So thank you. Thank you so much. And this is going to be a great blessing to many as they anticipate the year ahead.
Enjoyed our conversation very much, Andy.
Thank you. It was a great joy to chat with Alan Fadling, the author of The Unhurried Leader, a book that was recommended by a former guest on this show. And his website, again, is unhurriedliving.com. And I, for one, will be trying to incorporate some of his thoughts into my 2025. So maybe this is something that he's inspired you to do as well. Finding space and time can be tough, but stick it in the diary, stick to it, and you'll find the blessing. I'm sure God is no man's debtor or no woman's debtor either. So this is Andy Peck thanking you for joining us and wishing you a very happy 2025. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.